I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast. Coming up this week, we'll look ahead to England's prestigious friendly with Brazil in Rio, and we'll look back at a rather drab draw with the Republic of Ireland. The British and Irish Lions kick off their tour on Saturday as they face the Barbarians in Hong Kong. We'll hear from the Leicester Tigers scrum half, Ben Youngs. We'll also catch up with England head coach Stuart Lancaster as his side begin their South American tour. We'll talk tennis and cycling, and our very own racing Methuselah, Charlie Owens, will preview the derby at Epsom. But we'll start with football, and I'm joined by the sports broadcaster, Johnny Hart. And Johnny, we'll start by looking back to a rather disappointing 1-1 draw with the Republic of Ireland at Wembley. It wasn't the best of games, was it, really?
No, and there are quite a lot of journalists out there who are starting to get a little bit knives in the back with Roy Hodgson, because there are people who fear that he is taking us back to the dark ages, e.g. Gary Lineker, who we said off air you thought maybe wouldn't have made those comments had the BBC
had the rights to show the games.
Exactly, I know. And well, I think it's quite good in a way. It's quite refreshing that somebody as upfront as Gary Lineker can actually make those comments, because there are far too many people in the game, both pundits, commentators and journalists, who are so connected with the game they're frightened to criticise. I suppose it was a friendly, and it's sort of post-season when the players are very, very tired. It wasn't exactly a meaningful game, although, of course, both sides wanted to win for various reasons, really, the sort of the old rivalry between the two nations. And it is difficult to imagine England playing well against Brazil, having seen that. Gary Lineker was particularly unenamoured with the 4-4-2 formation and thought it was so backwards that there was no imagination coming from the midfield. But, you know, who's going to provide that imagination when you haven't got someone like Jack Wilshere
around? Jack Wilshere's out. I think we get too caught up in formations at times these days. I think if you look at modern football, it's very fluid.
He is a bit of a dinosaur when you think about it, our Roy. I mean, we like him, and he's gotten tremendous experience. But when you look at what's happening with the German teams, and that, of course, follows the great Barcelona team as well, you're thinking, the game is changing.
See, I actually think the opposite. I actually think he is in touch with modern tactics. He came up with a lot of the original tactics during his early coaching career. I think he is aware of different systems. I think he is aware of when to utilise certain pressing techniques. I think we do get caught up in formations. Oh, this is 4-4-2. It's too archaic. You should be playing one up top with three behind, etc., etc. It's actually about players doing the job they're supposed to do and players being given a platform to show what they can do and express themselves. And I think for all the criticism Hodgson gets, I think he understands how that works. And I think these criticisms weren't being levelled at him when we beat Brazil earlier in the year. And suddenly, you know, off the back of a friendly when all the players are rather tired and he's got a lot of players out injured, he's suddenly getting a lot of criticism.
But that is the problem with friendlies, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you can never... Can you really judge how good a team is? I mean, often what happens is we play well in a friendly, then we lose the next game and vice versa. And, you know, he's reacted to those criticisms, hasn't he, with talking about the 4-4-2 formations and the fact that he was... I mean, he actually was saying he thought that they were playing, like you've just said, like Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same base formation, but, you know, it's using different tactics and techniques at different times. And I think we have a generation of people now who have grown up playing football management games on computers who think that it's all about where you put players on the chalkboard and, you know, what formation they're in. That's a tiny...
You think
percentage.
That's how England players are actually playing the game in their
heads?
No,
I think it's how people are judging Roy Hodgson. I think there is an obsession nowadays with tactics, an obsession with what formation teams are in. That's just the starting point. From there, it's about how players then interpret the instructions they're given. And I think we get too obsessed with tactics. We get too obsessed with how teams set up. I think he's actually a very intelligent tactician. And I think if he's given the time, I think he'll get to Rio. I think he'll get to Brazil in 2014.
It's going to be tight.
Well, it is, but England are what they are.
I can see a playoff situation.
But England are what they are. And, you know, they're not a top team. They haven't been a top team for a long, long time. And I think he's working with a generation of players that don't have those natural techniques that some of the other teams have. You know, their players don't come through the system as comfortable on the ball as they do in Spain or they do in Italy or they do in France. It's a totally different setup in our country, and that's what Hodgson's dealing with. He's dealing with the players that come through that he has at his disposal, and he perhaps doesn't have the amount of options that other countries have.
I suppose we should be just thankful that the game is going to go ahead.
Well, yes, after various legal wranglings in Rio, it looks as though the game is going to go ahead against Brazil on Sunday night. And having drawn with the Republic of Ireland, England will look for a creditable result against next year's World Cup hosts.
I suppose anything but a heavy defeat will do.
Well, it's difficult to judge. I think, obviously, he's got a lot of players out as well. Jack Wilshere, you've already mentioned. Daniel Sturridge looked promising against Ireland in the opening exchange.
I mean, he's been the form player towards the end of the season, hasn't he?
But he's injured as well. I think it's a crazy time to have two friendlies. I think it's bonkers. Players very tired at the end of a long season. To go out to Rio was crazy. But, you know, there are obviously other considerations, financial considerations at work here. But how much...
Also, probably what doesn't hurt, the core of the England team going out, what's left of them, going out to Brazil a year before the actual tournament that we may or may not qualify for.
But I think going back to one of your original points, I think what can he really learn from a friendly at this stage of the season? I suppose that remains to be seen in the long term.
I suppose when they were planning this, 2 years ago probably, and they thought, well, we can tie it in with the FA anniversary. It will be a practice run for, you know, when we go to the World Cup. And there's plenty to be gained. But you're absolutely right. It is very difficult to imagine, playing-wise, what actually is going to be a positive coming out of it.
Well, let's hear from Roy Hodgson. Despite that criticism after the Republic of Ireland draw, he actually felt England played rather well.
Well, I'm disappointed we didn't win, of course, but I thought it was a very, very good game of football. I thought that we clearly dominated the game and we clearly asked a lot of questions of the Irish defence, but unfortunately the two or three really clear chances that came our way we were incapable of putting away.
So just to wrap the football section up then, Johnny, Hodgson being criticised for the tactics he's using, but ultimately, can we only judge him at the end of the World Cup qualifiers?
Absolutely. That's going to be the real tester. And if, as I fear, I know you find this always amusing when I'm the, you know...
The prophet of doom.
The prophet of doom when it comes to England. I fear we will... Well, I don't think we're going to win the group. I think we'll scrape through possibly on a playoff, but I've got a horrible feeling we're going to have to play one of the better teams, unless they seed like last time. They might seed the groups. But if we don't qualify, then Hodgson will be, you know, along the lines of a Graham Taylor. I can imagine him being the source of a lot of vitriol and sort of his career, as would happen with Graham Taylor, who had a great career up to that point, his career will be, you know, completely blackened.
Well, I'm going to go the opposite way. I think England will finish top of their qualifying group, and I think they'll qualify for the World Cup in 2014.
Are we going to win the World Cup as well?
No, they'll get knocked out in the quarterfinals,
of course,
in extra time. Let's switch our attention to tennis then, and it's been a very disappointing start to the French Open in terms of the British challenge. Andy Murray, of course, a non-starter with that injury picked up. He's hoping to conserve his energy for Wimbledon. But in the ladies' singles, first-round defeats for Laura Robson, Heather Watson and Elena Baltasha. So it's all over from a British point of view. But I suppose individual factors for all three of those. Robson
was playing one of the best players in the world as well, and Caroline Wozniacki. And I think perhaps our expectations are a little bit high with Watson, with Robson, because of course she beat, you know, some of the top seeded players, Lina, etc., last year, didn't she? In a number of big tournaments. So we've got very high expectations. She's somewhere in between 40 and 50 in the world at the moment. Yeah. And I genuinely think there's a top 10 player there. Not sure about Watson, but certainly with Laura Robson, she's making that exponential rise that is necessary in tennis. You always got to look at, you know, at what point the great players really started to make, you know, real progress and top 10, top 20, whatever. It's usually by the time they're 20. And so Laura's got some time to go. Heather, of course, as you mentioned, there are other factors. She's had glandular fever.
Yeah.
And I think Toby was saying last week when we were talking about this ahead of the Open that he had glandular fever, and he said you never feel quite the same again. Let's hope that's not true with Heather, or anybody out there who's got glandular fever, of course, because you know she is a great prospect, and I love the fact that we've got two young girls, Heather and Laura, at the same time, a bit like Justine Henin and Kim Clijsters, you know, who are going to be vying for top spot
and pushing each other,
playing each other probably more often than they would if they were from different countries, because you've got national tournaments as well, and they're just up in and amongst them. And of course, you've got poor old Elena Baltacher, who's the sort of forgotten woman. She never really ever looked like a top 50
player. Well, injuries have always done her in as well, haven't they?
Yeah.
She's never really been fully fit for the past few years.
It's difficult to judge, isn't it, really? But I don't think she's ever made the top 50. I think she's made the top 100. But I do feel sorry for her. And she, you know, she's back to the drawing board again. But you mentioned, I mean, the fact is that this, I think this is the first time in 20 or 30 years that we haven't had a Brit in the second round of either the men's or the women's singles, which is pretty shocking, really, when you think. Mind you, you know, it was Tim Henman.
I suppose what it shows is the lack of depth still on the men's side.
Oh, the men's side's a joke.
Murray is so far ahead of the rest. Yeah. And it's a source of it. It should be a source of embarrassment, really.
It should be a source of shame when you consider the amount of money the LTA gets every year and the amount of money that their boss, soon not to be their boss, Roger Draper, has been getting, what, £600,000 a year or something like that? And that is a shameful waste of money when you consider the only top 100 men's player we've got is Andy Murray. And might one argue that that's got absolutely nothing to do with the LTA because he was trained in Spain.
Yeah, yeah. And just one final point on the tennis, actually. You mentioned Heather Watson and the glandular fever she's had to recover from. I think Roger Federer at one stage had to recover from glandular fever, didn't he?
He did okay.
But that was a decent effort from Watson. She lost in three sets to Stephanie Vergler. She played for 2 hours. She felt that she missed a lot of chances to win that match. That just strikes me as one recurring theme in her game at the moment, that she perhaps, when she is on top, doesn't make the most of it. And presumably that's something she'll learn from.
Well, yeah. And as we keep saying, she is very, very young. And there's a lot better to come from her. I'm absolutely positive about that. So both her and Laura Robson, I think in a couple of years' time, they are going to be girls that are going to be playing quarterfinals, in my opinion. And Heather, she needs to have a year without injury, because she's also been quite injury prone as well.
Yeah.
Apart from the glandular fever. And, you know, Elena, I think the career is, what, a year or two away from being over. But let's just concentrate on Watson and Robson. Murray, well, we're just hoping that he's going to be okay for Wimbledon. We think he's going to be playing at Queen's.
You would think so. You would think maybe that having given himself that complete rest.
I think this is a good thing, actually, because he's never really enjoyed the clay very much. He's done quite well, but his game is not really suited to the clay, and particularly the physique that he has is not suited to clay either. So there was always, it's kind of like accident waiting to happen with Andy Murray, and perhaps it was fortunate he did it at an earlier tournament rather than actually at the French Open with only a few weeks to go to Wimbledon.
Well, now to rugby, and the British and Irish Lions kick off their tour on Saturday as they take on the Barbarians in Hong Kong. Skipper Sam Warburton's been ruled out with a knee injury, so Ireland's Paul O'Connell will deputise. 9 of the 15 starting players are Welsh internationals. Well, let's catch up with the Leicester Tigers scrum half Ben Youngs. He's part of the Lions squad for the first time, and he's also been reflecting on winning the Premiership final with Tigers.
Yeah, it's been strange, really. It's been trying to sort of put it to one side and not think about it. It's been very hard. So, you know, normally you come to these grand finals and you've either got an England tour and things like that, where, you know, you don't really have to focus too hard on it, because you know. But Lions comes around every 4 years, and you may never ever go on one again. So it's quite hard to ignore it. So it's real nice now. Everyone's come. All the Lions boys have come through injury free, and we can now just crack on and really embrace that. And hopefully, you know, the main goal for a lot of us is just to come back better players and just really embrace it and get to know guys that you're so often trying to stop.
Yeah, obviously, of course. Yeah, and a 6-strong contingent from your club, let alone the 9 or 10, whichever it may be, from England now, depending on Dylan, are going to be amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it's a very special thing. It's going to be my first tour, but I can actually stop trying to ignore it now, and I can actually enjoy that excitement.
Well, let's stay with rugby, and England left on Tuesday for their tour to Uruguay and Argentina. On Sunday, they take on a consort representative 15 in Montevideo in Uruguay. That's on Sunday. And then they're on to Argentina for two tests on June the 8th and June the 15th. And our reporter Russell Hargreaves has been talking to the England coach Stuart Lancaster for Talking Rugby and the RFU podcast.
You know, moving forward, obviously, you're off to Montevideo and then down to Buenos Aires with Salta in the middle. It's going to be a really exciting few weeks ahead, hopefully, for England.
Yeah, it's a perfect tour from my point of view because, you know, you get a chance to look at these lads. You get to rest one or two key players, and also you get lads who are, with the Lions, getting great experience there. So, you know, it's a win all round for me. And what we're going to do is make sure we come back with our objective intact, i.e. win all four games.
You've got that dynamic too of the players that played in the Aviva Premiership final yesterday to be seeded back in on top of what we've seen today and a few others as well.
Yeah, it's always the case this time of year. You know, you've got lads who are delighted to have won a final and lads who are disappointed to have lost. So, but, you know, the lads who are coming in from the Northampton side are excellent players, are good professionals, and, you know, I'm no, you know, a couple of training sessions, you know, it's probably the best way when you've lost a final to get back on the horse and start playing again.
Absolutely. What can we expect, do you think, from the Tour Down Under, from the Argentinians and obviously in Uruguay first as well?
I think very physical, very competitive, very passionate, a lot more organised than perhaps previous encounters because the quality of coaching has improved, the players are playing in higher levels of competition, so I think they'll come through and be more challenging to break down. It'll be proper test rugby because of the nature of the crowds and the atmosphere and intensity that's going to take place. So perfect for us, you know, to see and match ourselves against a good, strong Argentinian side away from home. And if we come away with two test wins, you know, we'd be delighted.
Well, now to cycling, and this Sunday sees the start of the prestigious Critérium du Dauphine race in France. It's a very important pointer towards the Tour de France. Sir Bradley Wiggins has won the race in each of the last 2 years, but it'll be Chris Froome who'll be leading the Team Sky Challenge this time around, and it's thought that if he performs well in this race, then his place as the team leader for the Tour de France will be cemented. So definitely one to keep an eye on. And we'll wrap up this week with racing, and it's the Derby at Epsom on Saturday. Looking ahead to this one is Charlie Owens.
Thanks, Kev. And the Epsom Derby dates back to 1780 and is still ranked the greatest flat race in the world. With winnings of £250,000, it offers one of the biggest purses in UK racing as well. It's run over a mile and a half of Epsom's unique and challenging course, and it's known as the Middle Distance Classic for three-year-olds. The race is open to both colts and fillies, but the norm is for it to be contested by colts, as is the case this year. The fillies have their own middle distance race called the Oaks. The Derby, well, it's steeped in 233 years of tradition, and it remains the race that everyone, jockeys, trainers, owners alike, all want to win. The favourite for this year's renewal is the Irish runner Dawn Approach, whose sire New Approach won the race back in 2008. Dawn Approach sits at the head of the betting market on the strength of his impressive five-length victory in the 2000 Guineas at Newmarket in early May. That was run over a mile, and you get the impression that Dawn Approach's trainer Jim Bolger is more than hopeful that his horse can cope with the Derby's extra four furlongs.
Well, if you were to take it at face value, he probably would not get a mile and a half. But because he settles so well and he has such a good temperament and he has so much class, he may well get a mile and a half, but we won't be sure until we try it. As regards the competition, I wish them all well. I respect each and every one of them, and I will not be losing any sleep over who turns up.
Dawn Approach is just one of a seven strong challenge from the Emerald Isle, and as there is likely to be only 12 runners in total, that equates to just shy of 60% of the Derby field. The only time in the last 25 years that Ireland provided such a large percentage of the lineup was in 2009, and it's interesting that on that occasion, the first five home were all Irish-trained, the winner being See the Stars. Tipperary-based Aidan O'Brien trains five of Ireland's seven runners, and the best of his quintet looked to be Battle of Marengo, Ruler of the World and Mars. And they'll definitely have to contribute if that amazing statistic is to be repeated. The English challenge is based around three horses, the best of them being Libertarian, who won the Dante Stakes at York in early May, which could be significant as three times in the last 10 years the Dante winner has gone on to win the Derby. Libertarian is trained in North Yorkshire by Carl Burke, and if the recent history of Dante winners does stand up, then he's every right to believe his horse is in with a shout.
if everything goes well and he handles the track, he's guaranteed to stay the trip well. And I can see him running into a place. You know, I think he's got that genuine type of chance. And if there's any flaws in any of the others, who knows what will happen.
Now, a race of this calibre always attracts plenty of runners from across Europe, and the French are represented by the undefeated Okovango, who's trained by Andrew Fabre, and he sent Pour Moi over to win the Derby 2 years ago. Okovango has yet to prove he's in Pour Moi's class, but his trainer does reckon he's got plenty of ticks in all the right boxes.
I have a little doubt, you know, because of a lot of speed on the damn side. But Monson is a good staying influence, and I think he should be okay. He has a very good balance. He acts on any ground. And he has a good cruising speed, and I hope the ability, you know.
Now, last Saturday, we saw for the first ever time two German teams contest the Champions League final. Well, this Saturday, we'll see the first ever German runner in the Epsom Derby. The horse in question is Chopin, who's trained by Andreas Voller, and he could be something of a wild card, as unlike many of the other runners in the field, there are no worries or doubts over his stamina.
He's a very relaxed horse. You know, he's great in his mind and very laid back in his work. He always just does what you want from him. So with a trip, I wouldn't worry. For me, the faster they go, the better.
So there we have it, a derby that boasts the best three-year-olds in Europe. And the winner, well, he'll join a roll of honour that includes such legendary names as Seabird, Nijinsky, Milreef, Shergar, and even last year's winner, Camelot.
Well, that's it for this week. From Charlie Owens, Johnny Hart, and myself, Kevin Hatchard, it's goodbye for now.